We're going to call the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee to order. Members, we have a very busy agenda today, so we're going to try to get through things. I know that the Republicans have a caucus at 5, so learn that. We'll try to get through everything before then if we can. We'll really be zipping. I need a motion for the minutes. Representative Fritz moves the minutes for March 6th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Okay, thank you. And first off, we have Representative Madore here with House File 3286. Representative Madore, if you'd like to tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. We were here last year to ask for increased funding for adults with disabilities. And we did have some language passed that allows for funding, but we did not receive an increase in appropriations. So we're back here today to say, well, you know, we're going to come back and ask for exactly what we need, and with the hope that we will receive something and work on this definitely for our next legislative session. So at this point, what I'd like to do is pass on to, because of our short time, and just have my testifier go ahead and testify to the bill. And this is Cheryl Geisters, and she will go ahead.
Representative Madore, we're going to need to move your bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the chair moves House File 3286. For possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill. So it's moved, and then welcome to the committee.
Yes.
You can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Cheryl Geisberg, and I'm with North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School. I'm the program facilitator for community education with the North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School, and part of my job responsibilities is a program called the Community Bridge. And Community Bridge is a program for adults with disabilities. And it's kind of a twofold program. Part of what we do, first of all, is include any adult with disabilities into community education classes and try to make them as successful in that class as possible. And then the second part of it is customized classes for adults with cognitive developmental disabilities. And that is the class that I think people are most, or that is the part of the programs that people are most familiar with when you talk about disabilities in community education. And it's possibly the most expensive. Some of what we do with the general community education, I did bring our catalogs around, is, for instance, people that need interpreters to be successful in the class, or if they need someone large print handouts, for instance, or any of a number of things, and it is my office that takes care of that. And then we do the programming, which is in the smaller catalog that I had passed out to you, and that is the customized classes. And that is anything from education to recreation. We work on life skills classes as well, and then a big part of it is socialization, because people with developmental disabilities need as much socialization as the rest of us. So we consider that equally important. And I just wanted to draw your attention to a couple of the classes that we have in there. One of them is the survival reading and writing. And now this is something that is specific to the North St. Paul Maplewood School. There are like 77 districts that have programs, and 33 of them are consortiums. So what I'm talking about now is specifically to the North St. Paul district. But this class came about because people with cognitive developmental disabilities were not able to make enough progress to meet the ABE standards, and so they wouldn't qualify for ABE dollars. So we needed to have something for them because they are working in the community. So we came up with this class, and we teach them things like how to sign their name so that they can write their own checks, and how to sign a timesheet, for instance, when they're working. They also learn to read, so they can read signs, they can read newspapers or newspaper headlines at least, and they also learn how to work with money. So when they are in the community, they are purchasing something, they know they're getting the correct change back. So that's just one of the types of educational classes we do. And in terms of the need, I just want to mention a class that I taught last night. And this is where you'll really see the need for dollars in this particular portion of it. It was a cooking class, and with all of the supplies, between the food, the instructor, What we pay is a chargeback for the room and building supervision. That class was going to cost $240. If I had truly paid the instructor what she was worth, because I only pay 1 hour of prep time, that's all I can afford to pay. It was really a 7 hour prep class. It would have cost $367. Now, the people with disabilities have very limited income. We could only charge $10 for that class. I had 18 people, so I only brought in $180 revenue. Now, what I did with this class is I taught it myself, so there were no instructor costs whatsoever. So because I taught it myself, my class was $185. I lost $5. Had I had my instructor teach it, I would have lost $60. And had I paid her what I truly needed to pay her because of the prep, I would have lost $177. And that's just one class out of 30 classes. Now, I don't mean to imply that I teach all the classes. I do have instructors that teach the classes. But I, and there's another staff member, that are willing to work for free for our program. So we do a lot of our own classes so that we can keep classes available for them and keep the money and use the money. And because of that, then, I'm subsidized somewhat by the general levy from the school district as well to help oversee some of the costs. So it's a huge need. The other big need is with the transportation. And I have many people who say to me in the metro area that they cannot attend classes because of transportation. And we're in the metro where we do have a fairly good busing system. Even in the suburbs, we have a good busing system. But you get outstate at all, and there's just no transportation for people. And that is what eats up all of their dollars up there. Plus, then they run into the same thing of you getting instructors to work for you and paying them a somewhat, you know, decent wage, and you can't ask everybody to give away their time. You know, and so that's kind of the big thing that I see why there is a need for money in this program. And we haven't received a categorical increase since 1991. So it's really getting tough for me to balance today's funding or today's expenses on $1991. Just like it would be to balance my home. I wouldn't even try to do my home on it. So that's the basic message I wanted to give to everybody today, is that there is a need, and it has been so long since we have received money. And I am very aware of the state budget shortfall, but we still really have a need.
Thank you, Ms. Dozlin.
Very quick. Mm-hmm. My name is Valerie Dozlin. I'm the lobbyist for the Minnesota Community Education Association. I just wanted to add on what our testifier said. The funding for this appropriation has not increased since 1991. We've had over 35,000 adults participate in this program approximately each year. And just on a personal anecdote, many of you see me here every day. I'm a familiar face. I have a twin sister who has disabilities, and she is a very active participant in the Adults with Disabilities Program in District 196 in Eagan, Rosemont, Apple Valley. And just as a family member of someone with disabilities, it's a very important part of my sister's life and a very important part of her ability to be involved in the community.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. And Ms. Geisbers, right? Did I get that right? And I know I've met you before. It's from my own district, so I'm glad to have you here today. And I get the catalog at my home, of course, and look through that. I know this is an important program for the state as well as in North St. Paul, Maplewood, and Oakdale. Members, are there any questions? Okay. Representative Medora, you want to make some concluding comments?
I do. I just would like to, Madam Chair and members, just to reiterate that this population of individuals who are being served are very low income. When we talk about the average income of somebody who participates in community ed, these folks are not. Oftentimes they're living on $30, $50, maybe even $100 a month. So the idea of taking $10 out for a class is a significant part of their spending money. So to ask them to ante up more to take these classes is not really appropriate. And given that we have not had an increase in people since 1991, it's time that we recognize that there is a significant amount of individuals who would benefit from more socialization, and community education is just the perfect outlet for that. And so I would ask again that we be given an ability maybe to get a little bit more, and definitely we will. We're very appreciative, and the dollars will go to good use. So, thank you.
Thank you. And the chair moves House File 32. Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had one question. Is this part of the a community ed does a discretionary levy? Would this be part of that? Would you need to do a discretionary levy then to be able to fund this? The local districts would have to.
Ms. Tosin?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, the statute is a combination of aid and levy for the Adults with Disabilities Program. The request that you have before you is a request of all aid.
Thank you. The Chair moves House File 3286, Medora be rolled over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And
thank you. Next, we have House File 3130, Representative Murphy. While Representative Murphy's locking up, I also want to point out my Community Education Director, Maureen Larson, just to raise your hand, who was here to testify the other day and had to leave before, but on the school-age care bill. So thank you for coming today as well. Representative Murphy, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I would like to move House File 3130 for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Omnibus Bill.
Representative Murphy moves House File 3130 for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Bill. And Representative Murphy, we will also be hearing your bill as an amendment to the Walker Bill. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to present your bill?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. House File 3130 is a fairly simple bill. It creates a child care advisory task force to help families applying for child care assistance. There is no fiscal impact in this bill. Before I turn my time over to the witness, I would like to explain that we worked with DHS on this bill, and they were a little concerned about the timing. And so when we amend this bill into, when we try to amend this bill into another bill, we will, in the amendment, there will be a date change to recognize DHS's request. And with that, they were good to go with this proposal. So I want to make sure the folks in the audience from DHS knew that we were taking that seriously and taking action on that. And with that, I'd like to turn my time over to the witness.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Deanne Besch, and I am representing the Minnesota Child Care Association, as well as a subject of Children's Child Development Center. My career has been focused entirely on early childhood education and center-based child care, especially for children, is owned and operated by Stephen Priscilla Williams of Edina, Minnesota, and our nine centers are located throughout the metro area. We interact with seven counties with regard to child care subsidies. From the perspective of center-based early childhood education and care, I'd like to add my support to the recommendation of developing a task force to remove barriers for families applying for child care subsidies. It is our hope the task force would impact the now overly complex, time-consuming, and often frustrating system currently in place. Parents are faced with a system that is very difficult for them to move through. It is our hope that the task force would impact their struggles. Parents are faced with that system that is very difficult to navigate and timelines that make the goals all but unmanageable. The administration on the part of the child care provider is also time-consuming and frustrating and ultimately costly. There are significant inconsistencies from county to county. I found these to be the main concerns of a cross-section of providers I spoke with. As questions regarding billing, payment, or authorization arise, some counties' phone systems are difficult at best. For example, one county's system routes you through menu after menu, often only taking you back to where you've begun. Even if you have the name and number of the worker you were trying to reach, you were routed through their system. In addition, the payment line is open from 1 to 3 p.m. Anyone with questions or concerns has only those 2 hours to contact them. The voicemail message suggests that they will be returning your call within 2 days. Often it is even longer. Time is often of the essence. Children and families' livelihoods are impacted each day there is a delay. Subsidy billing issues also require follow-up that can be avoided if the system functions properly. Some counties send out invoices that require parent signatures prior to submission, while others do not. Frequently, there are several invoices missing, which requires additional follow-up on the part of the provider. Once again, the phone system becomes an obstacle. Other counties routinely pay an amount different from what is billed with no explanation. In the end, often the additional check might be cut and the missing portion of for the missing portion of the payment. All of this follow-up is costly and time-consuming. Authorizations are often for a very limited time frame, some as short as 2 weeks, requiring more paperwork for the parent and additional administrative follow-up. Reauthorizations are not completed in a timely manner, which creates lapse in care for children or financial risk for the center. Ultimately, the list of issues goes on and on. This is a system that is not functioning at the level that would be acceptable in the corporate world, and it's our opinion that it should be unacceptable in county and state government. The current system is a detriment to children and families, as well as those individuals providing care. It's our sincere hope the task force will be appointed and will explore the following recommendations. A system that offers online applications and billing for parents. We believe most providers would be available to assist parents with an online application and reapplication process. Simplify the system of paperwork for families, both upon initial authorization and reauthorization. Longer authorization periods, allowing families to stabilize and children to benefit from the relationships and routines that they would establish. A focus on a full circle of communication between the county, the parents, and the provider would be well worth it throughout the and impact communication strategies. Our global vision is to implement a system that has been designed to be efficient and respect everyone's time. Any improvements initiated by task force that would move us towards these goals would be greatly appreciated. Thank you for your time and your consideration in establishing the Child Care Task Force. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Members, are there questions? I think, personally, this is a very important bill. You know, I think that we have so much paperwork for our families that the kids get caught in that and not getting the best service possible. So it's pretty important. But Representative Murphy, I think there's no legislators on this. I was just noticing that.
Madam Chair, can you repeat the question?
Representative Murphy, we've been going through an awful lot of task force in Carlos Mariani's, Representative Mariani's committee, and they all seem that there's this big debate about if you have legislators involved on these task forces or not. Did you think about that, or?
Madam Chair and members, I have not given that strong consideration, and I would be happy to contemplate that with you. So we'd be happy to do it.
Thank you. I think we can think about it. I mean, we've been debating the merits of why or why not legislators are good for certain committees, and sometimes when we're going over rules and things, you know, our attention spans are shorter than other times, so maybe we can think about that, but that was just one thing I noticed. Representative Gottwalt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Murphy, as I saw this coming forward, two obvious questions came to mind. One of them, what is this task force meant to accomplish? And then secondly, is there a fiscal note on it? What's the cost going to be to whoever to create and run this task force?
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair and Representative Gottwalt, there is no fiscal note on the bill. There is no cost. And the purpose is to make easier the application process for the families seeking and reapplying for child care assistance.
Representative Gottwalt, we had this discussion before you came in. We're also going to amend in Representative Murphy's bill to the next bill, House File 3376 Walker, and they're going to extend it so it minimizes the cost and there's no fiscal note. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. With that,
Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion.
Okay. Representative Murphy, Representative Murphy, Rep. Renews. I'm trying to hurry so much, and I'm stumbling, so I will slow down. Renews her motion for House File 3130, and that it be included for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. With that, we'll have Representative Walker next, House File 3376. The Republicans are caucusing at 5, so now we're trying to kind of make sure we get some of the testimony in on the governor's budget as well. Representative Walker, I think it's the first time you've been before our committee.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Well, welcome to the committee. If we can have someone move Representative Walker's bill, Representative Ward.
I'd like to move House File 3376 for
for be recommended to TASC, to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division.
That's exactly what I said, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ward moves that House File 3376 be recommended to pass to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division. Representative Walker, you want to tell us about your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually going to give this to the department to start going first.
Welcome to committee. If you could state your name for the record.
I'm Ann Sessom from the Department of Human Services, and I am going to talk about Articles 2 and 3 because they are the two articles that are pertinent to this committee. Article 2 has two policy changes to the Child Care Assistance Program. The first revises the allocation formula for basic sliding fee that goes out to the counties. This change was worked out with the counties, and it's been done at their request. Instead of using a single point in time to determine what money can be reallocated, we are going to use a six-month average because they felt that was more representative of their spending. And we are also going to cap cap the amount of funding in each of the priority categories for basic sliding fee so that we do not allocate more money to a county than it needs for a certain priority category and the funds can be used more for everyone, people who need them. The second change in Article 2 is that it will allow participants in the School Readiness Connections Project. Last legislative session, this was passed and it was called School Readiness Service Agreements. We shortened it to School Readiness Connections. And it will allow School Readiness Connections participants to be exempt from the absent day limit. The reason that we are making this proposal is that these are at-risk children who are in this pilot targeted program. And one of the purposes of the program is to have continuity of care so that they aren't being disrupted, and so that was why we are proposing to lift the limit. Article 3 has technical proposals. Do you want me to highlight each of them, or?
Maybe just a few of them, the most important ones. I know, members, this is a department bill, so they originated this. If you can just maybe pick one or two to explain.
Okay. I won't go through the ones that are purely technical. We're removing references or changing a reference. One of the changes is clarifying background study requirements for legal non-licensed provider family members. This was done at the request of the counties as well. They want it to be made explicit that they can access background studies for certain juveniles in the home. We're making a change so that all provider rate changes will be implemented on a Monday. This would be when the legislature makes a change. Generally, you would stipulate July 1st or January 1st, and it will be the Monday following that date so that we can implement it on the computer system and so that we can implement it the way people are paid. We're correcting some absent day notification requirements. This was a technical. The language was incorrect last year. And the language in the bill will prevent employees of licensed family child care providers from being paid to care for their own children. The law currently prohibits family child care, the holder of the license, from being paid for taking care of their own children, but we became aware of at least one situation where the family child care provider had hired some employees and they were pretty much taking care of each other's children and being paid to do that, and the bill will prohibit that.
Okay. Thank you. Members, do you have any questions? We do have some amendments. Maybe we should move through those. The H3376A3 amendment. Representative Fritz?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Would you like to move it?
Yes, I would. This is the, as you said, the H3376A3 amendment, which was my bill that we had and heard through here on the reduction of risk of sudden infant death syndrome in licensed programs to, require that those folks have received from the parent a doctor's slip or doctor directing alternative sleep positions for infants.
Representative Fritz moves Amendment H3376A3. Any further comments on that? Members, you see this happening in a number of committees where we're combining policy into sort of a policy bill, such as the one we have before us, and that's because of the short nature of the session. And if we took all these bills individually, we couldn't possibly get them all through on the floor. So, Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just listening to the way this is being worded, and I understand what we're saying here. The infant's doctor makes sense. You need some documentation from them, but would they would receive that from the parent is what I just heard explained, and I'm wondering if we want to make that a little clearer in the language. I'm not trying to be obstructionist here. I'm just thinking.
Representative Fritz?
We could incorporate that.
Can I ask staff to help with how that would be? What would the suggested wording be? Would like to take a shot at Representative Fritz or Representative Gottwald. Okay, why don't we do have two other amendments, so why don't you visit about that, and we'll put that on the table for now. We do that. Okay, so if you can visit with staff. Okay, so the A3 amendment is tabled for the moment, and we'll move on to the H3376A5 amendment, which is my amendment. This is the SMI conversion amendment, and what this amendment does is it simply provides the detail on how the department will implement the conversion of the CCAP eligibility from the federal poverty guidelines to the state medium income. We actually enacted this change to SMI last year, which will go in effect July 1st of this year. Basing eligibility on SMI is better for our families because it's a mechanism that looks specifically at incomes in Minnesota and is more accurate reflection of economic situation and earning capacity of Minnesota families and than the federal poverty guidelines, which is a nationally set standard. So this is actually just taking something we've done and making sure we get it passed into through this bill. So any discussion on this? Representative Grafflow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Was that a smile or a scowl when I raised my hand? I couldn't tell.
Grafflow, I'm just so pleased to see you here.
Thank you. So you're saying the SMI goes into effect on July 1st,
mm-hmm.
and this is just modifying the fee schedule, that's it? There's no fiscal impact?
Yes, I want to turn to the department to verify that. Ms. Sessions?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative, the way we were directed to come up with a change that was cost neutral, so this fee schedule is cost neutral.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? All those in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A5 amendment is adopted. We'll go ahead with the A4 amendment. Representative Murphy, is this your amendment?
It is, Madam Chair. This is the bill that we just heard on the Child Care Advisory Committee. I want to thank Representative Walker for entertaining this. On the second page of the amendment, you will see on lines 2.1 and on 2.8 where the date has been changed from 2009 to 2010 at the request of the Department of Human Services. And Representative Gottwald and I have had a mind meld and a confab, and I believe we have a verbal amendment, an oral amendment, to add to this when staff is ready.
Do you have that, or do you need Ms. Lemire to read that?
I can tell you that the intention of the amendment is to add a parent to the working group. Madam Chair, I think if on page 1 after line 13 you insert 3 in parentheses and then a parent receiving child care assistance semicolon and then on lines 14 and 15 renumber those to 4 and 5.
Okay. So add 3 after line 1.13, a parent receiving child care assistance, and renumber for 4 number 5, Representative Murphy. Does that reflect your desires?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gottwald? Okay, thumbs up. All right, members, any discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the A4 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Amendment is adopted. Thank you. So we revert back to the A3 amendment. Representative Fritz?
Yes, Madam Chair. I think we resolved this on line 1.7 after the, not the, pardon me, 1.7, the infant on the infant's back, comma, unless the, then insert, parent provides the license holder documentation from the infant's doctor. So the everybody have that?
Okay, let's see. So it would be insert 1.7 after the parent provides the license holder and then insert with. Is that what I heard?
Mm-hmm. With documentation.
With documentation instead of have.
Provides with.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Ms. Lemire, are we in agreement that works? Okay. Members, any questions? Representative Norna?
Not really a question, Madam Chair, but I understand why this language is needed, you know, in the first place, but I was discussing it with my wife, and I'm afraid that if our children had been in somebody's care, they were rolling over at about 3 months. It would have been tough to abide by this with our kids, because they wouldn't lay on their back. You know? So, just a comment.
Yeah, Representative Norton, I mean, Representative Fritz, maybe you want to comment on that, but I recall we had a mom, we were here the day the mom came in and talked about it. It was very, very sad.
No, I understand that, but and they also said at age 1, I guess they don't consider them to be an infant anymore. But so, you know, if we expect them to lay on their back, that isn't always going to work. That's all I'm saying.
And there, Representative Norris, I had those exceptional children too. And but this is just some infant, from 0 to, you know, 3 months, 6 months. When they start turning and rolling on their own, they're, I hope, out of harm's way. But
the language doesn't say that, though. It doesn't say that there's a point where the provider is never going to be harmed, will be held harmless because the child now can roll over. I don't know how you'd even say that. But I guess my point was that at some point, children are going to be restless and mobile. And I don't want the child, the provider, to be found to be in violation of the law because of that. That's all.
Representative Fritz, any comments?
Actually, no, Madam Chair. I think this is a good amendment, and I think I'd like it to go on.
Why don't we, you know, continue to think about that? I mean, Representative Walker is your next off the floor.
Madam Chair, you had Representative Ward move it to the Education
right.
Finance, but my question to you, I'm not sure, I know fiscal bills change, but do you normally send your policy bills to Representative Murphy's committee? Is there a reason why it's going to that committee?
Representative Walker, it is a little bit, most of our bills are rolled in for possible inclusion, but we're a division of her committee, so technically our bills do go up through her and then through finance. And
because this one, mind you, it wouldn't be rolled into, it also has the MFIP stuff, this is just cross jurisdiction. We just had to make a stop. So we keep the motion, but I think it's something to check on, because I'm not quite sure why it would have to go to a committee to see if it should be going to the floor.
I think that in conferring with staff, the bill can go, she'll just do a re-referral to the DHS or to HHS.
We already came from there. We need to go to the floor.
Okay. Is it just finance?
There's nothing financial in the bill.
Okay. So you could go to the Hey, Representative Walker, we've been told they'd like to see it. We have the finance chair here. Maybe he has some insight into this. But I knew. I knew you didn't. We thought you would come just for this.
We'll have... Madam Chair, like I said, we can keep the motion, and I'll have the department follow up with the chairs of both Representative Murphy and Representative Carlson to find out why I would have to go through a financial division. This is a state policy, from my understanding.
Okay. Thank you. And we are, you know, as we are somewhat new in the majority, so the path of bills is not always as clear as we would like it to be, so I appreciate you.
Madam Chair, I think it's one of the difficulties because you guys do policy and finance here. When it came out of Health and Human Services, it's just a policy committee. And so looking at it from this being a finance committee as primary and not necessarily policy as primary, I think that's where the confusion might have happened.
Right, exactly. Representative Baca, we're going to miss you around here next year. You're not going to get the good advice.
I can't, Madam Chair, say I'm going to miss you all that much. And just, you know, okay. Not while you will be doing the business. You individually, yeah.
Thank you. We still need the A3 amendment to be voted on, members. Those in favor of the H3376A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Ward, you want to renew your motion? Oh, Representative Walker, how about any closing comments?
Oh, no, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm carrying three department bills, and it's just been fun having everyone from anyone attach stuff onto my vehicle. It's just been great.
Thank you. Representative Ward?
Madam Chair, I will move that House File 3376, as amended, be moved to Representative Murphy's committee.
Representative Ward moves that House File 3376 be recommended to pass as amended to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill passes. Thank you.
Madam Chair and Committee, for your consideration.
Thank you. Next member is going to have testimony by the department. If I can invite Mr. Hoffman to come forward. And after that, we'll have Chuck Johnson. First, Mr. Hoffman, we'll talk about the forecast, the child care forecast, and then Chuck Johnson will do the governor's pages. So we'll try to fit this in and get done by 5 if we can. Welcome to the committee. We're glad, I know you needed to leave early, so this we got done early, and glad you're here. And
thank you, Madam Chair. I'm George Hoffman from the Department of Human Services. My division does the forecasting in medical programs, the cash assistance programs, and in our in the child care program. And at my right is Susan Snyder, who does the child care forecasting. And what we're here to talk about the changes in the forecast from end of session, and we're handing out a one-page summary of those changes. And at I will turn it over to Susan Snyder to talk about the changes.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Susan Snyder from the Department of Human Services. I'm going to discuss the FFCY child care forecast for February 2008. What's being passed around now describes the changes in the forecast from the end of session forecast 2007. There have been two forecasts since then. We have a November 7 forecast and then the February forecast. In this forecast, we're projecting expenditures for the CCAP subsidy program for both MCIT families to use child care and transition year families. These are families who are leaving MCIP with earnings and are eligible for child care assistance for up to 12 months after they leave MCIP. Basic sliding fee is not included in these figures because we do not forecast expenditures. That's a cap-appropriated program. So in the first table in the handout, you'll see total expenditures of both state and federal dollars for MCIP-wide child care, broken down by biennium, this biennium, the FY08-09 biennium, and the next biennium. So in the first column, you'll see the end of session forecast. This is in thousands of dollars. So for this biennium, the forecast was 238 million, and for the next biennium it was 241 million. Then in the next column we have the change we made in the November forecast with a decrease in both biennium. In the next column you see the change we made in the February forecast from the November forecast, and again it was a decrease. The next column has the total change from the end of session to February, and then the final column is the February 2008 forecast, our most recent forecast for these programs. And in this biennium we're now forecasting expenditures will be $210 million in this biennium and $220 million in the next biennium. So that's an 11.4% decrease in spending in this biennium and an 8.8% decrease in the next biennium. The next table is just the general fund expenditures on the program. And you'll see at the end of session, for this biennium, we were projecting we would spend $147 million of general fund dollars for the program. And for the next biennium, we would spend $142 million. The changes, again, we have the change columns for each forecast and then the total change. You'll see most of the changes line up with the changes in the total program. When we make changes to the forecast, they generally come out of the general fund side. There's one difference, and that is because we had underspending in state fiscal year 07, but we spent less than we had forecast. There was there were federal dollars left over, about $9.7 million left over from federal funds, and that got rolled over into the 08 spending on the federal side, and so we were able to take that out of the general fund spending in 08. But otherwise, all the other changes match the changes for total expenditures. And so the February forecasts for general fund expenditures are expected to be $110 million for this biennium and $121 million for the next biennium. Now, the final part of this page has a breakdown of where the forecast changes come from. So we have the changes broken down by this biennium and next biennium. We had a 25.1% decrease in general fund expenditures in this biennium and a 14.9% decrease in the next biennium. Most of these changes can be traced to lower caseload projections. The biggest change is in the MFIS child care caseload projections. The caseload itself, our forecast of the caseload declined between 6 and 9% based on data we've seen with lower MFIP adult caseloads, that is a smaller eligible population, and lower participation rates, a lower rate of use among MFIP families. That's what we've seen in recent data. Now, you'll see this effect is bigger in this biennium than the next one, and that's because of a more pessimistic economic scenario that we incorporated into our February forecast. We're expecting to see MFIP adult caseload increase, and so the eligible pool for CCAP will increase. The next biggest component of the forecast change is in transition years child care caseload. And again, we've seen in the past year lower transition year caseload than had been projected at the end of session. And we're expecting the caseload to continue to decrease below what we expected before, because of the more pessimistic economic scenario. These are cases that would be more sensitive to higher unemployment rates. We expect to see less transition year caseload for that reason. The next item is the underspending of $9.7 million in federal funds in fiscal year 7, which directly decreased what we needed to spend in general funds in fiscal year 8. And then beyond that, there are some small changes in average payments. But that's most of the story of the forecast change.
Thank you. Members, we can take questions. I did have the opportunity to meet with Ms. Snyder and Mr. Hoffman before this, and I think my comments were something like this. It's kind of, it's a little bit counterintuitive. I mean, you would think we'd be using more of everything in tough economic times, but with this, really people are using less. And so I think it's interesting for all of us, you know, as we're going through budget deficits and we're all looking at a lot of budget numbers to see an area forecasted as less and not something, I think, you know, most of us are looking at how to make things become less. So it's an interesting trend. Members, do you have any questions? If not, well, Representative Norna.
Well, I can wait. I had a question on community ed. Can I ask that?
Yes.
Just looking across community education, can you explain why in 2010, 11, and...
Representative Dornis, right now we're on the forecast changes. So these folks are only doing the forecast changes?
Okay, that's why I was wondering if this was a proper question.
Oh, to do with...
It just looked like there's significant drop in community education. I just wondered.
Why don't we...
We can save that for another day.
Well, Ms. Adrians, did you pass that feed out? Mm-hmm. Okay. Why don't we... Let's finish up here, and then let's come back and answer the question. Representative Murphy, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question. Can you, and maybe you did, sorry, so forgive me, but can you talk about the underspending of the federal funds? What triggered the underspending of the federal funds, please?
Madam Chair, we spent less than forecast in fiscal year 7 because of lower caseloads mostly, and so those lower caseloads went into the lower forecast deductions.
Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, and thank you. So is there anything else besides spending below the forecast that contributed to the underspending of federal funds? Is that totally it?
Ms. Snyder? Mr. Hoffman?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I believe what we do when we spend less in that situation is we spend the state money and let the reduction be in the form of federal funds, and then we carry those federal funds over to the next year. So essentially the reduction, the state gets the reduction, but it gets it in the next year instead of in the year from which the federal funds were carried over.
Thank you, Representative Gottwald.
Just briefly, Madam Chair, I wanted to go back to your earlier comment about the counterintuitiveness, and maybe if our testifiers could comment on why we're seeing that drop. Times get tougher, we see a drop in utilization, and the reason is?
Ms. Snyder.
Madam Chair, Representative, when unemployment goes up, we would expect the transition year caseload in particular to decrease, because these are cases who are, they become eligible for transition year by leaving MFIP with earnings. So these are cases who are getting jobs and leaving MFIP. So when unemployment rates are higher, we would expect to see fewer cases like that.
Interesting. Thank you. Any other questions? Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. And members, why don't we have Representative Norris ask his question as DHS comes up, and then Mr. Johnson, and then we want to briefly at least, I know the governor's budget for our area is very, should not take that long, so maybe if we can go through it. Ms. Adrian, can you address Representative Norris's concerns about, there was a spreadsheet that was passed out?
Sure, Madam Chair and Representative Nornish. Community education is one of those programs that changes with the forecast, and so I don't have a really good answer right now for why it goes, I assume you're looking at line 13 where it goes
That's
from
correct.
Like 1.3 million and then it's down to set. And so I'm not sure if it's based on participation. I don't believe we made specific cuts to it last year, so I believe it's based on participation, but I can find out more, or the agency can answer some of those questions.
Madam Chair, the only reason I ask is that when I go home to my district, I always seem to meet the community ed director, you know, at the Viking Cafe or wherever she sees it. And then she always asks me about funding. So I just wanted to know if there's some significant reason that this changed like it did. So.
I think that's a good question. I think, members, also just to talk about the schedule, we will not be meeting on Thursday. We will be meeting next week on probably on Wednesday, and that we'll be trying to pass our bill out at that point. Hopefully we'll be coming out with it before then. I know Representative Groffalo is interested in targets, and is that Representative Groffalo?
No, I was just going to, the question, this would be like the quickest budget presentation ever. I was just going to say, there's no changes in fiscal years 8, 9, 10, and 11, correct? That's all I got. I think we're done.
And we'll be doing most of that early next week, so that's kind of the schedule for that. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, Chuck Thompson, Department of Human Services. I think you have something before you that looks like this. Is that correct? That's the pages. There are two pages to bring to your attention from the Department of Human Services. The first, which has page 19 at the bottom of it, is called Administrative Budget Reduction. This is, you're probably familiar with this from other departments. This is the Department of Human Services across the board 4% reduction in our administrative budget, similar to what other departments have in the governor's budget. That amounts to $5.9 million reduction for the department. We estimate 39 FTEs as well would be affected by that. We're just in the process now of identifying how we're going to move through a process of meeting this target, clearly wanting to protect anything that has a direct effect on clients who are being served and critical items around legal and financial obligations. And Chair, the other page is 26. This relates to TANF refinancing. This page refinances $91.5 million of TANF. That is, it appropriates TANF to three places, creates a like amount of general fund, which is used then to offset the budget deficit problem the state is facing. This is done in a budget neutral way, for each of the three areas that are affected, meaning that there's no reduction or increase in the dollar amounts for those programs and no impact on services provided in those programs. There are three pieces to the refinancing. The first is $21 million in the Child and Community Services Act grant. This is in 09. Across 08 and 09, there's $31 million in refinancing in child care, the MFIP transition year part of child care. That's done through a transfer from TANF to the Child Care Development Block grant. The third piece is the MFIP grants themselves, those are the grants that go are paid out to families, and that's $39.5 million across the 2 years of banning, and that totals $91.5 million. This page also includes something called excess maintenance of effort, which is an opportunity that was created in federal regulation that relates to our TANF work participation rate, which is the measure we have to meet under the federal government in order to avoid penalties under TANF. And we are doing something under this page with our maintenance of effort dollars that allows us to mitigate the potential penalties in 2010 and 09 that also affects maintenance effort dollars, but doesn't affect the TANF dollars directly.
You finished?
I am.
Okay, thank you. Remember, just to say, remember our budget is half MDE, half DHS, and then the MDE part, there were no cuts, so that's the good news, except there is the 4% administrative, and just like there is on the DHS side, it's not clear exactly how that carries out into our budget, because this is for the overall, right, your whole department.
Madam Chair, I believe that the department's administrative budget is under the jurisdiction of the Health and Human Services Finance.
Exactly. So right, it's under the jurisdiction. Our bill actually splits off and joins that bill. Members, are there any questions? So it's mostly the TANF refinance, which is approximately $6 million for the MFIP transition year.
Ma'am, $31 million across the 2 years of the biennium, but it's 25 in the first year and then about 6 in the second year of the biennium.
Okay. I know the Republican members need to leave. Someone had called and left a message at my office that someone could answer my question I asked in finance yesterday, which was how much TANF have we refinanced over the last several years? So was there someone here that can answer that? I did want to get that answer as long as somebody's here to do that.
Sure, I think you guys the answer.
Okay. And we probably, won't go into a lot of detail here about the downside of refinancing TANF, but members, it is our time to, shine light on the governor's budget, and I hope people understand what this does. It is money that could be helping needy families and kids with child care. and it's displacing it in essence. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Nelson. I'm a budget director for the Children and Family Services, part of DHS. In terms of TANF refinancing over history, the first TANF refinancing that was done was back in state fiscal year 2000, just a small amount. Since then, and including the governor's proposed $92 million refinancing of TANF, about $291 million has been refinanced, or will be refinanced. The biggest mechanism that has been used is the Child Care and Development Fund block grant, a transfer of TANF into the Child Care and Development block grant. The second biggest has been transfers into the Social Services block grant. Both are allowable expenditures and transfers under federal law. If you add it all up, it's about 8% of the TANF that we have received and will receive through state fiscal 2011.
Thank you. So for child care, how much do you think the amount would be out of 291?
$137 million.
Since 2000?
Since 2000.
Is there any way to estimate how many people that would serve, would have served?
I guess I would look at the budget forecast that you just received. And under that, the total M50Y budget was $230 million, roughly whatever that caseload is, and a portion back to $137 million, so probably about 60% of that caseload would be an estimate.
Yeah. And what would that be?
Well, I'm looking over to Susan as to what about 6,000
so
for a year.
6,000 kids didn't get childcare because of
families.
6,000 families didn't. It's a lot of family members. So I think that's something we need to think about. I think we all need to think about what we're going to do with the governor's budget, and obviously we will be coming out with our own budget as well. So you will see us come out with something also. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the sake of accuracy, that it means 6,000 families that did not receive state help with child care.
That's correct, right? Yes.
Madam Chair, for 1 year.
For 1 year. Well, that would be, okay, we're 1 year's time. All right. Any other questions? Thank you. With that, the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee is adjourned.